Hey, listeners. I'm Karen Riley Jeffers, NCSM's Eastern 2 Director. Welcome to our series, Learning with Leaders, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, Abel Maestas, the host of Teaching That Counts, as we talk with both leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guests about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights regarding instructional decisions that make the mathematics space welcoming and engaging to all. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person feels a sense of belonging in mathematics.
Well, welcome everybody to our NCSM podcast this month, our Learning with Leaders in our series, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Once again, co-hosts here, Abel Maestas and
Karen Riley Jeffers.
We welcome everybody listening to our podcast this month, and I'm excited for this podcast. We've got a very special guest that was on my other podcast, which I know many of you know it out there, but we have today, we'd like to welcome Miss Rolanda Baldwin to the podcast. Rolanda is a, she's giving him a hi. So just a little bit about Rolanda. Rolanda is currently the Vice President of Program Design at Unbound Ed, and she's been a middle school, high school math teacher, a math instructional coach, a district math curriculum coordinator in all of these different roles in a large district in North Carolina. Her love for math brought her to Unbound Ed as a math specialist. And she was a math director, and now she's the current vice president of program design, where she's responsible for overseeing the growth and development of Unbound Ed's entire math, science, and Unbound Ed planning process program portfolio. So we love to have Rolanda here, as she's so passionate about reshaping educational systems and frameworks to help educators plan and deliver grade-level, engaging, affirming, and meaningful STEM instruction. So thank you for being here with us today, Rolanda.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
But thank you again for being with us today. Before we begin, even though Abel just introduced you, would you share some of your journey in education that has led you to your current work with us?
Yes, I would love to. I am a non-traditional educator. I actually started out in electrical engineering for 8 years, and then a variety of things happened, and I wanted to be closer to students. I was doing volunteer work in the community with middle and high school students, and then I decided I actually wanted to make a bigger impact, so I decided to teach math, and I started out teaching middle school math and for 4 years, and then I moved up and taught high school math for 5 years. So I have taught every grade between 6 and 12. And one thing that I found, I was passionate about it coming in, kind of came in with the like, I want to change the world, but found when I got here, reality struck. And I thought that just being excited about math was enough to get my students excited about math. But I really learned about how to approach math instruction in a different way, and to really think about how I could get all students interested in math. I never have believed that there are math people and not math people. So it was always my mission to get students tapped into math, no matter, you know, how they saw themselves. And so I was fortunately able to scale my impact by moving to be a middle school math coach, and then moving to the district level, and then now with Unbound Ed, where I get to influence math teachers and math leaders all across the country.
Nice.
That's awesome. In this series, our series is titled Everyone Belongs in Math. So our leading question to all of our guests is, what does it mean to belong in mathematics?
Yes. So first of all, before I even answer that question, I just really have to define how I think about mathematics. A lot of times when people think about math, they think about school math, but my approach is a little different. I think of math as ultimately noticing patterns, generalizing those patterns and then applying those patterns to the everyday things that happen around us. So when you think about math in that way, everybody definitely belongs in math because it is critical thinking and problem solving that everyone needs to navigate life. Definitely when you're a student and you get better and better at it, and definitely when you are an adult, when you are a citizen in this world, you need those critical skills. So I think a lot of times in math is seen as a gatekeeper, like it's something that keeps students from different opportunities, but I like to think of math as a gateway. And if all students have access to quality math instruction and they're able to see math as a useful tool, then I think it just opens doors for them just to have a better quality of life.
Nice. Yeah. Can I, before we ask another question, I'm curious to elaborate on this gateway and gatekeeper idea. A lot of times this gatekeeper, right? That has tones of like blocking people off. Like if I'm a gatekeeper, my goal is to say, well, you come in and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
A gateway allows everyone to go through.
Mm-hmm.
So in what ways can we really, because I think some of the mindset of some people, they think gateway, and I think some mindset of teachers out there, mindset of some systems people are like, yeah, math should be the thing that tells me like, well, these kids can and these kids can't. How can we shift that mindset so that people think of it as a gateway and not a gatekeeper? Because we still hear it. Algebra is the gatekeeper, right? Or, you know, math, eighth grade math is the gatekeeper. How do we change that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way, generally speaking, not that this happens 100% of the time, but generally speaking, math is taught in a very decontextualized way. So, you know, you have these procedures and algorithms, and if a student isn't able to go through those procedures and those algorithms in that decontextualized way, they're seen as not being good at math. So whether that's like taking a standardized test and not doing well, or just not making good grades in math when it's taught in that way, and then you don't have the grades or you can't pass that particular test, and that's holding you back from advancing into other math courses. Or a lot of times I've seen where students, like they make it out of high school or close to getting out of high school, and let's say they're interested in a particular program post-secondary, like let's say they want to be a mechanic, or they want to, like, even this, it's not even just four-year opportunities, but they have to pass this decontextualized math test in order to gain entry, like into a program to get the specialized training that they need for what they're interested in. So I think that is how it is seen as a gatekeeper rather than a gateway. So if we open up our definition of math and think about it as generalizing patterns, noticing those patterns, and if we can have math instruction, if we can teach math in a way that's more connected and contextualized so that students will engage with it more, then it is a gateway. They see it as a tool to navigate life versus a course that they have to pass in order to just get to the next thing.
Thank you for that. I was thinking about what you were saying regarding critical thinkers and how we have to teach our students how to think. And it reminded me of Zaretta Hammond's work and how, you know, if we're going to be culturally responsive, like we do have to teach our children how to think so that they can be the problem solvers of the world. And they have that independent skill to be able to do that. What's one of the components of our district's portrait of a graduate that that we're producing, you know, pre-K through 12, that we're producing those critical thinkers. So your work around advocating for educators working to make space for students to bring their authentic selves into the classroom. What are some ways that we as leaders can support educators in doing this?
So, great question. The first thing that comes to my mind is that as leaders, whatever we pay attention to, whatever we give feedback on, wherever there's like energy around, those behaviors are the ones that are rewarded, or those behaviors are the ones where things happen. So I think we have to think back to, as leaders, what are our expectations? So as a leader, we have to identify what our math identity is. You know, some leaders of math are very comfortable in math, and so you could be deemed as having a positive math identity. But even within that, what is our comfort level with math? Is a comfort level like the way that math has traditionally been taught and following procedures and seeing like their kids who do what they're supposed to do, their kids who aren't? So when you're going to classrooms and you're supporting teachers, like, are those the indicators that you're looking for? Are you looking for, you know, kids to be sitting a certain way, kids to be, you know, writing, copying down whatever the teacher is saying, kids to be following those procedures? Or are you opening up your definition of what math success looks like? So are you looking for that student discourse? Are you looking for students talking to each other, and not only talking to each other using academic language, but maybe using their home language, whether that be another language or a variant of English, so that they can process the concept that they're learning. And then we can build a bridge to that academic language so that they can speak that, but they understand it even deeper because they can process it in two different languages, essentially. And then just thinking about when you're visiting rooms, like, who is seen as the authority in that room? Is it solely the teacher? Is it solely the text? Or is it also the students? Are students able to pose problems and make those connections and be recognized? And then even getting down to scheduling, when you think about collaborative planning or PLCs, what are the expectations for that time that teachers spend together? Is it a time to talk about field trips? Is it a time to talk about, well, I'm gonna do activity A, B, and C? Or is it a safe place for them to practice some new strategies they may not feel comfortable with, but they can practice it and get feedback on it within that PLC? Or is it time, you know, to dig into some standards and making sure that or into the curriculum, to make sure that we're really attending to the language of the standards in a way that is meaningful for students.
I love that you said teacher, text, or student regarding the authority in the classroom. And I should know that the text is a form of authority, but I wasn't thinking about it in that way. And it's just so true. And I'm glad that you called that out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a district that I'm associated with that talks a lot about like fidelity to the curriculum, like, you know, fidelity to the instructional materials. And I worry that terminology, like fidelity to the instructional material, gives a sense of the instructional material as the authority.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how we can change that language.
Yeah. So actually, step one, I like using the word integrity versus fidelity when we're talking about high quality instructional materials, because I definitely think high quality instructional materials, that is like the floor. That is the entry point to having effective instruction. But it is very general. It's not made precisely for the students that are directly in front of us. And so we have to make adjustments for that. And then we really have to understand why the high quality instructional materials are doing what it's doing. Because if we follow it like a script, like, we're really kind of taking the meaning out of it in some ways. It's just like if I had a speech and I just read it just verbatim, didn't put any expression or any emphasis, just was flat, it's not going to be as impactful as if I'm like emphasizing certain parts of it, if I'm pausing to give the people listening to reflect on certain things, if I'm posing questions. So same thing with that curriculum. So it is definitely an entry point, and it really allows us to shift the way that we do our lesson planning. So yeah, we don't have to go and search the internet for activities or things, because those are there. But then we can really interrogate that curriculum and say, okay, what pieces of this lesson what pieces are assisting us getting to the grade level standard and what parts are essential to the grade level standard. So that way we can manage our time. We can spend most of our time on that. Okay, this context that's given here, how will students relate to this context? Will I have to do some front loading so that they can understand the context so they don't get so stuck on that they can't get into the math? Or can I change the context to be something that students can relate to better so they can focus on the math? So just thinking about it that way as a tool and as a good entry point versus as something that we just have to be robotic about and do exactly as written and not really think about why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I interviewed someone for my podcast and she said something pretty cool. She said, we teach students, we don't teach the curriculum. We use the curriculum as a means to teach students. Absolutely. And so that, I think that's, I see her teachers like, well, I'm teaching the curriculum. Well, you're teaching students. Like, let's focus, like, isn't that who we're supposed to be focusing on? And who is the lead in this classroom is the students. Mm-hmm. So those are some really great ways, I think, for some teachers to think about how they leverage the high quality instructional materials in their classroom, as opposed to just like, you know, doing all those things that exactly it says, to think about how to use those high quality materials. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to bring back something that we talked about on the Teaching That Counts podcast. And that was this idea of Gleam. And since you were on the podcast, I know you presented at the last NCSM conference on Gleam, which is a acronym. And I was part of a couple of trainings in our county, and I saw the acronym on one of the slides from one of the presenters at our county office. And I was like, hey, that looks familiar. So can you talk about how Gleam can help bring belonging into the classroom?
Absolutely. So first of all, that's so exciting that the Gleam message is spreading, because it's something I truly believe in. But yeah, so let me just break down what Gleam means and kind of speak to that. The GL is for grade level. So that means that we are putting forth grade level text and tasks that are aligned to college and career ready standards. So that piece for me, speaking to the belonging, I think it's showing that when you present that to students and give access, it's showing students that every student deserves to be given that access. So that piece speaks to the belonging, because if we make assumptions and feel like certain students deserve access or should get have access and certain students shouldn't, then like this saying, you don't belong here. You don't belong. You don't deserve this. When we talk about engaging, we're not talking about, a lot of times people think about entertaining or edutainment, where we're just doing something fun. The kids are all participating. But if that activity is not in service of that grade level learning, then we're not truly engaging by the way that we define engaging here at Unbound Ed. When we talk about it, we're talking about helping students to fostering persistence in students. We have active learning strategies, and we're building academic agency by tapping into students' assets. So when we see what students bring to the table as an asset rather than a deficit, then that is also speaking to the belonging, because kids have funds of knowledge. Like, because they just exist in their families and in their communities, there are things that they know, and it's our job to connect that to the school learning to build a bridge, just to kind of expand that. So that's when we talk about engaging. The A is for affirming. And when we're talking about affirming, this is the piece that probably speaks the most to belonging, because we are nurturing students' identities. Specifically, in this case, we're talking about their math identity, but we cannot talk about math identity separate from their other identities, because there is a interconnectedness between all of those. And it allows them to bring their full authentic self to the learning experience. It honors who they are, and it provides, by providing a mirror into who they are, but it also provides a window for other students so they can understand others as well. So some examples of how affirming instruction may show up. I think I spoke to it earlier when I talked about giving students space to speak in their home language, whether that be another language or a variant of English, while they're processing information, giving students really having that collaborative learning. So also when I was speaking about who has the authority in the classroom, so that really helps them to fit, to belong. And then the M is for meaningful. And when we talk about meaningful, it's more than just being relevant, but it's really empowering students to see math as a tool to make a change in their world. So we're really nurturing that agency and nurturing their advocacy for change. So this is when students start asking questions. They see math, they're like, well, hey, I could use this data to show my principal that we need to have a longer lunch period. I'm just throwing it out there. But yeah, just basically collecting data of what we're doing, some type of math to make a point. So it goes beyond just being relevant, but also that critical thinking about how can I make a change in my world using math as a tool, which of course makes you feel like you want to belong in math because you're doing it for an actual reason, not just to pass a test or to move to the next grade.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. You just reminded me of a meme that I saw about math, and it was in response to the type of math that helps me travel. And so they were calling themselves, referring to themselves as a math person, or at least the math type of person that they want to be or like to be, in terms of the time they have to get up to make it, to park the car, get to the airline, and all those other things, just making it applicable, reinforcing the fact that we are math people. We just don't think about it through that lens. Just need to get more people on board with that.
Yes, I think people see school math as separate as real life math. So we really have to get thinking about a Venn diagram. Like, how can we get that to overlap more so that people see it as being relevant?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are some ways that teachers and leaders can support students in building math identities? And why are those so important for math learning for all students?
Yes. So having a positive math identity is essential for students, just building that persistence and that stick-to-itness when we're talking about math, and not just going through the motions. So I think the first step for a teacher and a leader is just to really reflect on their own math identity. Reflect back on their K-12 experience. Like, did they feel like they belonged? You know, was it a positive experience? Was it a negative? Like, how was being good at math defined for them? Because that's going to influence how they lead math instruction and how they teach math, and what their expectations are of students, how they want students to show up. So when you evaluate where your expectations come from, that's going to really make you think about, like, okay, what am I expecting of students? And then you can make adjustments there. I also think that really understanding, doing a deep dive into content and understanding, like, math content for teaching. A lot of times people assume, well, just because you're good at math, then you should be able to teach it. But the math content for teaching is a little different. So I would encourage leaders to look into ways, think about the types of professional development experiences that you are providing for teachers. Think about the expectations for collaborative planning. Maybe some collaborative planning time needs to be a deep dive into number sense, or a deep dive into ratios and proportions, just to make sure that teachers feel comfortable conceptually with that content, so that when students show up and show their proficiency or their understanding in a different way, teachers feel comfortable in making those connections and not just saying, well, you didn't do it the way I did it, so it must be wrong, or shutting that student down because a teacher may have some fear is a strong word, but I'm just going to say fear because I don't have a better word at this moment. Like, having some fear of, like, oh no, the student's going to say something and I'm not going to know how to respond. So just building that comfort level there. And then leaders and teachers really need to get to know their students on a deeper level. You spoke of Zaretta Hammond earlier. She talks a lot about the surface culture versus the deep culture. A lot of times when we think about culture, we think about like, oh, what type of music do you listen to? What, you know, what are some of the holidays you celebrate? But when we're talking about deep culture, we're really thinking about like family traditions, worldviews, how they view authority. And so when you get to know students at that deeper level, you can start making different connections to their work and thinking about the assets that they bring to the table and how you can leverage those assets. And sometimes people are like, well, how do I don't have time. I'm teaching all this stuff. I don't have time to get to know my students. But there are little ways. You're thinking about adding a fun question to an assessment. And it's deeper than like, what's your favorite color? Like maybe it's like, what is your favorite family tradition? What is a place in your community that you like to go to? Just to understand them in that way. For secondary, you know, during the passing period, when you're standing at the door, you can talk to your students then, or just like you hear students talk, they like talking about themselves. So just like listening to when they're talking to you and understanding those things. And then, yeah, those are the primary ways just that I can think of at this moment. Yes.
I'm glad you brought up the examples, because I was going to ask a follow-up question if you didn't give examples, because that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. We're already short on time, and some of us don't get enough time with math. And when, you know, the clock is ticking, students have to get back and forth. When are we supposed to take the time to get to know them? And so I'm glad that you shared some concrete examples to give our listeners some ideas.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. And the other thing I reflected on is that many teachers that I talked to, some of the reasons they are, well, one of the reasons they are a little apprehensive to go to an asset-based method, right? Like problem-based method or something where it's asset-based, is because they are nervous about not knowing what to do or what to say when mm-hmm. students have questions that they're not prepared for, right? Because it's allowing the student to show you what they know, but sometimes you don't know what they're going to ask. And so if you're not pretty solid with the concept backwards and forwards, it's a little scary that they could say something. You're like, I don't know what that is. But I think it's okay to say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When I was in the classroom, I would definitely say, I don't know. I said, but you know, I'm going to find out. And in fact, I'll give extra credit to whoever finds out before I do. Mm-hmm. And just put it out there. So yeah, I think it's fine to show your humanity and say, I don't know. Let's figure it out together. I think that's fine. And then also going back to that collaborative planning time, reframing how you use that time, because two heads are always better than one. So, you know, three or four would be even better, where when something's coming up, put your heads together and think about all the ways that students could come up, the things they could say, and how you could address it and you can practice it. That doesn't mean that when you actually get in the classroom real time that you will have covered all the possibilities, but because you've thought about it a little more deeply, I feel like you'll feel more comfortable and better prepared to address it, or more human to say, well, you know, that's great. I thought about it this way. Let's dig into it together and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, just today I was with a group of students, and they were doing a problem. I gave them a task to do, and they drew a table. That was what they wanted to do. They drew a table, and they showed some work through a table. And as we were consolidating and synthesizing what they were doing, I had mentioned, you know, this is a great way to show what the problem is asking you to do. Putting a table is wonderful. But I'd like to show you another way that you might see later on down the road that maybe another teacher might ask you to do. And so I want you to be able to have all of the options that you could possibly have to show what we're trying to show, which was we're adding by four. So I showed him a different way, and I said, but I just want you to know, this is a different, I'm not telling you you have to show it this way. I'm just saying that you could do it either way, but your way is perfectly correct as well. And so I wanted them to understand, like, I know that if I had just thrown something up there, they would just want to do it that way all the time. Like, I don't have to be the authority all the time. So I really think it's important to acknowledge what the students are bringing to the table.
Absolutely. And because you showed them, like, they did the table, which is something they understood because that's the way they addressed it. And then you showed them the equivalent way to do it in another way. Like, they're drawing that connection. So in the future, if they get in the class and they see the other way, it will probably make more sense to them because they're like, oh, this is just like when we had the table and it did the thing. So yeah, so for them to be able to see it in multiple ways, like it expands their own understanding. So yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Okay, so how about if you can give us one tip? So if you were to give one tip to the leaders that are out there listening that can support a sense of belonging in mathematics that is connected to your work.
I would have to say redefine mathematical success. It's so easy to get caught up in the scores, the dashboards, you know, what is the testing going to look like? And we lose the child. I think, you know, you all spoke to that earlier, like teaching the subject versus teaching the student. So just being open to ways when we redefine mathematical success, you're going to start looking for different things when you're visiting classrooms. You're going to start having different types of conversations when you're coaching teachers, when you're thinking about scheduling and structures, like for collaborative planning, you're going to start thinking about different ways that teachers can prepare for instruction. If you just redefine mathematical success, like open that up. It's more than just following procedures, mimicking the teacher. Just really leaning into, we're actively cultivating mathematical thinkers versus we're creating imitators. So that would be my one thing. Redefine mathematical success.
All right.
Thank you so much for all the tidbits that you shared with us today. I learned so much all the time, every month. And you gave us some great nuggets to think about. So thank you so much for joining us. But before we leave, how can our listeners learn a little bit more about your work?
Yeah, so I would invite them to visit us, unboundeded.org. Visit our website. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at UnboundEDU. Oh, also on LinkedIn, UnboundEd. You can find out about all of our exciting programs. We even on our website, we have some free resources and some blogs, some tools that you can use to get started. And then you can look into some of our other services as well.
Thank you.
Awesome. Everybody loves free, right?
Yes. $3.99, my favorite price.
$3.99, that's right. Okay, so thank you so much, Rolanda, for being with us today on the podcast. We appreciate all your insights. And like Karen said, we learn something new every month from all of these podcasts. So it's just a joy speaking to you again today. And thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we hope you listen next month.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation and will tune in to our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM Leadership and Mathematics Education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.com. You can also follow NCSM on the X at mathedleaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.